Chapter 4.
Surprise! It was raining in Dublin the next morning. A grand soft day. Soft, is it? Bex muttered as she looked out of the window onto O'Connell Street, the gutters running with water, which was better than running with blood. Soft, more like the fucking flood. Bex had long since become acclimatized to thinking in an exaggerated stage Irish patois when she was across the water. It was not the prospect of getting wet that worried her, but the well-known fact that it was notoriously difficult to keep up a lone surveillance operation in teeming rain. The common wisdom was that you could not play anyone long in a downpour, though Bex had a sneaking suspicion that, even in monsoon-like conditions, you could probably remain well back for much longer than they thought, on those thrilling and purposeful weekends run by anonymous men and women at places like Bramshill. Subjects of that kind of surveillance in this kind of weather had their own problems. Just to be certain that today's Chase Me Charlie was still on, she dialed the emergency number. The same dark brown voice answered. "I'm going to call you," he said, after she'd spoken. "Only thing to do is see where she goes. While she's out, we're putting some ears in her room." This, Bex reasoned, meant that they would be bugging Beecher's telephone. Bex had a feeling that this was really the work of the security service, doing things on the sly, with her representing the yard. No names, no pack drill. After all, they still had so many funnies operating in both north and south, that she reflected it would not come as a surprise to hear that a flock of cloned sheep had been unmasked as an anti-terrorist intelligence unit. It was raining harder than ever when she got outside, brawly extended, raincoat belted and buttoned. For a second she had a minor fantasy about the raincoat, which was really a white trench coat, and because of that quite unsuitable for the kind of job she was on now. Charlie found the coat sexy, particularly with her knee-length black boots, and had told her so on many occasions. She could have done with a warm bed now, with old Charles whispering sweet nothings in her ear, and possibly wearing the trench coat over nothing at all, and letting him unbutton it. Last summer he had dared her to go out wearing the trench coat and nothing else, apart from a tiny string of coral beads at her throat, and, of course, the boots from Bali that had cost the earth. The little fantasy and remembrance lasted less than 2 seconds, damped down by the infiltrating rain, which thundered like hoofbeats on the canopy of her umbrella, sweeping fine spray against her face. Up ahead, Beecher was wearing a dun-coloured Burberry and carrying a dirty grey umbrella. Not for her any telltale hue, like Bex's trench coat. Yet Bex had her in her sights, and quickly perceived that Tessa Murray knew exactly what she was doing, looking for anyone on her back. Come to that, so was Bex, just in case they had some kind of mutual admiration society on the go. She watched what Tess was up to, stopping to glance in windows, examining her reflection, and those of the people around and behind her, going into a couple of the shops, having a bit of a browse, buying another umbrella in one of them, a dull green to merge into the surroundings. Bex checked her own back while she watched her quarry going through all the ancient routines of the black arts. "Thank you, St. Baden-Powell, for teaching us the rudiments of the chase." Another incongruous memory faded into the back of her mind. Venice, Piazza San Marco, and in the throng of crocodile school kids and parties from Luton and Slough, she remembered seeing a furled umbrella lifted high with a glove over the ferrule, a tourist guide beckoning her party along. The glove almost obscene, waggling fingers in constant motion. As far as she could see, nobody was watching her, though there might have been a car as the traffic was moving slowly, grinding along. If she was being led by the professional watchers, it was probably an odds-on bet that someone would be watching her back. She smiled at a memory of Charlie in the bath, warbling, "Raindrops keep falling on my head," as a particularly large drip hurtled from a shop front and splattered onto her face. She muttered a silent prayer as she crossed both roads, pausing at the median, looking at the ancient battleground of the GPO, still with her quarry just in view, and beating the traffic by 2 fast seconds, getting her feet on the pavement, close to Easton's bookshop and BHS. Another smile, recalling that Charlie always referred to the shop as the British Stone Whores. It was not particularly clever or witty, but it was typical of Gauntlet, who could make her laugh with the simplest of jokes. She glanced right again, thinking of the statuary up the street. The floozy and the jacuzzi would be wetter than ever this morning. She just caught sight of Tessa scurrying across the bridge over the untroubled Liffey and on into Westmoreland Street, hugging the scholarly edge of Trinity with the Bank of Ireland flush across the way. In her head she heard Charlie singing, his cracked voice warbling his own version of Singing in the Rain, which would make a nun blush, so it would. Dublin was having an odd effect on her, but then she had always loved the city. She traversed busy Nassau Street and reached the foot of traffic-free Grafton Street, and there was no immediate sign of the target. Concerned, she slowed, eyes raking rapidly from side to side, then sliding up the street, trying not to move her head and so draw attention to her searching. The usually crowded shopping precinct was only sparsely populated on this chilly, wet morning, half a dozen scattered ahead, as though God had thrown out a handful of struggling human seeds, wrapped against the rain, and rolled into the street like dice or magpies. Out of the left corner of her eye she detected movement. She recognized the colours, and was aware of Tessa Murray exiting a shop. Bex swung away, dropping her head, doing a little jig with the umbrella to bring the canopy down and block off her face, 90% sure that her prey would not recognize her again. To make certain, she slowed and dropped back, conscious of her pulse increasing as she felt the tension that had gone almost unnoticed until now. She was almost level with Bewley's Oriental Café, the chip scent, perfumed de bangers and mash, with brown sauce full of Eastern promise. "The rain, it raineth every day," she heard, the sound of an almost forgotten, slightly harsh-voiced Festy, that sad jester, from an amateur production of Twelfth Night. God, she thought, "the rain, it raineth every day." She'd been in love with the young man who played Festy. She'd not known it at the time, but she knew it now on a damp Dublin morning, heading up Grafton Street toward magnificent St. Stephen's Green. Why had that tittle of truth come back to haunt her now? Beecher, ahead of her, turned into Stephen's Green, with O'Donoghue's famous pub huddling just out of sight, and the Shelbourne, grand, standing proud and expensive. Yet when Bex Gauntlet, still trying on the name for size and keeping her own for work, could see the Wolf Tone monument, there was no sign of Ms. Teresa Murray, only the traffic and one soiled old rover near the curb, but pulling nicely into the stream. "Lovis, I've lost her," Bex thought, and in the same instant realized why she'd thought of the long-lost love who'd played Festy. It was not the callow boy who'd played the fool that had dragged her back, but that the character Festy was sometimes, in truth, Charlie Gauntlet. Billy the Kid of Stratford might have written the part with one facet of Charlie in mind, that threnody of sadness that lurked behind the layers of strength and buffoonery. "It's not sadness I feel now," Bex thought. "I'm just pissed stupid at having lost the girl. Oh, shit." So, eventually, after taking some precautions via the Shelbourne Hotel, she dragged her way back to the Gresham. And as she returned in the rain down the traffic-free Grafton Street, she was oblivious to the tall, slim figure, trench coat over his blazer, collar turned up, and a soft cap rammed jauntily on his head. He looked slightly dazed, and you would never in a million years think he was interested in Bex Gauntlet, nay Oleska, as she hurried, wanting to get in out of the rain.